This is the Dinner Party Download from APM. If you love the show, share it with a friend on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Let's meet our guest of honor.
All right. And this week it's Damon Lindelof. Mm-hmm. He co-created the ABC series Lost, widely considered one of the greatest TV shows ever. Yeah. He also wrote installments of the Alien and Star Trek movie franchises. But most recently, he co-created HBO's The Leftovers, along with Tom Perata, who wrote the book it's based on.
It is about a family living in the aftermath of an unexplained event in which 2% of the world's population suddenly vanish without a trace. In a way, it's a study of how people deal with grief and loss. In this clip from the first episode, a woman whose baby disappeared and a man who lost his wife meet by chance at a bar.
Where were you? When it happened, where were you?
I was in my house, cleaning out a gutter.
Oh.
Where were you?
I was in a parking lot at the laundromat.
Hey, we're still here.
Sure are.
Since it debuted in 2014, critics have called The Leftovers one of the best shows on TV. The series finale airs this weekend. Before Damon and I talked about the show, though, I reminded him we have a past.
It is wonderful to be here.
So normally we ask all our guests a standard question, which is tell us something we don't know. But I'm just going to say right at the top here, probably many people don't know that you and I were both on the writing staff together for the MTV show Undressed.
Yes.
Back in like 2000 or something.
It just hit me, yes. that was in like 98, man.
Was
like
it 98?
Or 99,
I don't
want
to think that far back.
And we had to write 36 episodes in 6 weeks. And every three scenes, we had to figure out a way to get people into a hot tub.
That's right.
And which is the same on The Leftovers, by the way. Oddly enough.
That's not true.
Yeah,
For those who don't know, this is a show. It was basically a late night MTV soap opera for teens with a lot of sex in it.
It's 20 years ago.
That was about 20 years ago.
Oh my God.
By the thing I most remember from that show is Steve DeKnight, who was our head writer.
That's right.
We'd say, I don't know what should happen next in this scene. And he wouldn't even read it. He would just say, pop the top.
Yep, get someone's top off. Absolutely. Male, female, didn't matter. Equal opportunity.
So here's my question to you.
Oh, boy.
Well, it's not that hard a question, but is there anything that you took from writing that show into the rest of your writing career on, you know, massive sci-fi epics?
Absolutely. And I'm not just spinning it, because the amazing thing about that show was we had three sets, right? So, and the way that Undressed worked was there were three different storylines. There was a high school storyline, there was a college storyline, and then there was like a just graduated storyline. And we were all writing scenes in each storyline, but they kind of had to oddly interconnect, but they all had to just take place on this set.
Yeah,
and
like I think entire high school storyline had to be on like one set.
Right. And so the limitations and the speed at which you had to write was great boot camp, because it's like that scene in Apollo 13 where, you know, they're running out of oxygen up there and the dude just walks into the room and dumps out like a box of stuff and says like, we have to make like a filtration system out of this. This is all we have. And one guy's like, could we use a pen? It's like, they don't have a pen up there.
Yeah.
So I think that once I started writing for bigger budget movies or, you know, network drama, it almost feels like you can kind of do whatever you want. But returning to that idea of like limitations are a very good thing. Sometimes you need to know where the walls are. Limitations and deadlines are a writer's best friend, I think.
Yes, although it does help to have, just if you do come up with a great idea, to have as much money as possible to throw at it budget-wise.
That seems to be the case. And yet, like, the best movie I've seen in the last year is Get Out. You know, and so, like, can you put that movie side by side with Guardians of the Galaxy 2, which is a great movie, but cost $170 million more, and say that it's $170 million better? Mm-hmm. So everyone's like, what's Jordan Peele going to do next? You know, I'd love to see him get his hands on a $150 million movie. And I'm sort of like, I don't know. Is that a good thing?
Yeah, maybe that'll be. And we have seen this many a time. A lot of people talk about indie film as being like a boot camp
right
now for major motion pictures. And then you see people flame out when they get those budgets.
Not just flame out, but it's sort of like, you know, Colin Trevorrow makes a great, cool movie like Safety Not Guaranteed. And then now he's doing Star Wars films, and that's great. I want Colin Trevorrow or Rian Johnson to be making Star Wars films. But at the same time, I also want to see what their follow-ups to, you know, Looper and Safety Not Guaranteed are.
More personal films.
Right. I just want to say, by the end of this interview, we're getting someone in the hot tub.
Right.
We have to figure it out together for old time's sake.
That'll be weird on public radio. We can just do it by bringing up a sound effect.
That's exactly
right.
Just
pretend we're in one right now.
Oh, man, you've ruined the illusion. You've
Sorry.
Taken away the magic.
But let's talk about the kind of sci-fi that you do, which tends to be, well, let's just say that one of your earliest influences, you've said, was Twin Peaks.
Sure.
Very ambiguous, weird, dreamlike thing.
Yes.
Lost had a similar kind of ambiguous mystery at the heart of it.
Right.
You've said that that's one of the attractions to you of The Leftovers, is that it's this, everybody's living in this ambiguous world where there is no resolution.
Just like the real world, yeah.
Why are you so attracted to that?
As frustrating as it may be for others, I've always been drawn into the story that has an interpretive ending, the book that has the last 10 pages ripped out. I've told this story before, but not terribly recently, which is there were these books called Encyclopedia Brown books where there were these little mysteries. Encyclopedia Brown was a boy detective. And at the end of the case, it would be like, how did Encyclopedia know that Bugs Meany stole his bike? And then you'd flip to the end and it would tell you what the giveaway was.
Yeah.
And my dad caught me basically like flipping to the end before I'd even really thought it out. So he ripped out all of the answers in my Encyclopedia Brown books. And so I would go to him and be like, is this how he found out? And my dad would be like, oh, I don't know. I threw those pages away. So I just have to sort of sit there thinking like, I think I got it, but I'm not sure.
So and this is how you grew up basically.
Yeah, but I'm still catalyzed by, you know, like Making a Murderer or Serial or S-Town, those stories don't have fixed endings because they're real. And there is this idea of reality of just like never knowing.
I kind of figured you'd say that. But on the other hand, the reason why people go to see narratives and the reason why narratives have such a pull on us, I think, is because they're a way to organize the world in a way that it isn't in reality. So you go into a story wanting some order. You want a beginning, middle, and end. So it seems like if you're not ever going to give them that payoff at the end, you're working at a disadvantage from the beginning.
You are giving them something else, though. Like you take a movie like the original Blade Runner that ends with a high degree of ambiguity, and even Ridley Scott's director's cut, even more so. This idea of like, well, was Decker a replicant? That's the Harrison Ford character. We're not going to tell you. And, you know, Blade Runner comes out, it bombs, you know, but here we are. 30 years later, anticipating the return to that world.
There's a sequel but coming out.
I just think that's another way to tell stories. There's got to be room for both ways of doing it.
Let's talk about actually the writing of this show. You burn through the plot of the book, I think, in the first season.
Yep.
So now you're free to sort of take it wherever you want to. And it does, because it has this ambiguous quality and because there's an almost stream of consciousness thing to it, I wonder how much of it was plotted meticulously out in advance or how much you're just kind of going with the flow. It feels like something very organic.
Season by season, there has to be a plan. Well, that's the thing about television storytelling is you don't really know what pace you're going to be chewing through it until you're actually engaged in it. The story that I love is that 24, the television show, they basically pitch that show so that the first season Jack Bauer finds out there's going to be an assassination attempt on the president's life. And in episode 24, he thwarts that assassination.
Right.
He ended up thwarting it in episode 6. And so they're like, all right, we've got 16 episodes to go post-thwarting. What do we do now? So I like being in charted territory. I like it when I'm approaching an episode and I don't quite know what to do and you have to kind of fumble your way through it.
Really? You like it?
I do like it.
That sounds like stress beyond imagination.
It is stressful, but it's also the most exciting thing about storytelling is discovery. When I watch an episode of Mr. Robot or Fargo or Legion or Transparent, I'm like, what's the next episode going to be? You know, there was an episode of Transparent from this last season that revolves around a turtle or a tortoise. I think it's a turtle. And it just like devastated me. I mean, my wife and I watched it and we just looked at each other and we're like, something beautiful just happened. And we were completely not expecting it. That's the kind of thing that I'm chasing is, you know, this idea of discovery, the unfathomable, the indescribable. I can't explain to you why that turtle moment is so great, but I can almost guarantee if you just watch that one episode, even if you don't watch Transparent, you'll understand that something incredibly special just happened.
We already got an answer to our first standard question, which is tell us something we don't know. Our second question is, if we were to meet you at a dinner party, what question should we not ask you?
Oh my God. Were you making it up as you went along? Which you've already asked me here. Because,
sorry.
No, it's because you shouldn't ask it to me, not because I don't want to answer it, but you're going to get my speech. And you're going to hate me even more than you already do probably before you ask the question.
Why is that? Your speech was great.
No. My response to that at a party is, you know, is people actually only ask me two questions. One is, were you making it up as you went along? And the other is, how much input do the fans have? And they want the answer to, were you making it up as you go along, to be no. We had a plan. There was a binder. There was a blueprint. We followed it to the letter. There was no spontaneity. There was no winging it. We knew what we were doing every step of the way. That's the way that we want mom and dad to answer that question. That's the way that we want our leadership and the country to answer that question. There's a plan. Question number two, how much impact do the fans have? They want the answer to that question to be like, a lot. We listen to everything you say. If you don't like something or a character, we'll kill them off. If something's too confusing to you, we will adjust based on your input. Nobody wants to hear, I don't care what you think. The fans have no impact on the storytelling whatsoever. And no one can identify the paradox between these two answers. Because if there is a plan, if there is a binder, if there is a blueprint, then the fans have zero impact. But if you want to have impact on the storytelling, then there can't be a plan that we won't deviate from.
Yeah.
And then I say this, and as I'm talking to people, I can start to see their fate. They get them getting angrier and angrier and angrier at me. Wife politely squeezes my elbow and gets me out of there. Poor Heidi, my wife, has to hear that speech over and over and over again.
And now all of America has as well.
All of America.
Thank you so much for talking to us today.
Really good to be here, and let's go hop in that hot tub.
Damon Lindelof, he co-created the HBO series The Leftovers. The show's last ever episode airs this weekend.
There'll be no leftovers?
I guess not. Alas.
It'll be a director's cut. Okay.
No.
But look, that's not the last everyone will hear of Damon. If you subscribe to our podcast, you can download a special bonus show in which Damon tells us, among other things, why Gary Busey is a modern prophet.
Oh, yes.
Yep. You can search for The Dinner Party Download on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen digitally.